Music City, Nashville, Tennessee. Two guys fumbling their way through the music business so you don't have to. Here they are. It's Scott and it's Hino and the Music Row Show.
All right. Hello, friends. Welcome to the Music Row Show. My name is Scott.
And my name is Hino. Thanks so much for tuning in. This show is for all you songwriters and musicians and performers out there who are just trying to figure out their path here in Music City and how things work around here.
That's right. Now, remember, we don't know anything.
That's true.
We're out there slinging songs during the day just like you guys are, but we are able to find the right people, bring them into the studio, pick their brains, and get you into the conversation as well.
Yeah, and you can do that by going to facebook.com/themusicrowshow. You can like us and join in the conversation right there. And, of course, you can also find us on Twitter, @themusicrowshow. Conversation just started right now.
I'm about to log on right now. Hey, you know, if you haven't already heard, and I can't imagine you haven't because the whole town's a buzz, Dish subscribers, you can now watch us on TV because the Blue Highways TV network has just been picked up by Dish.
That's true. You can watch us 4 times a week on Channel 73 all over the U.S. And for us, the great thing is for the first time ever, right here in Nashville. That's awesome. After 3 years on the air, finally, we can, you know, be on the air in our hometown, which is
well,
awesome.
And not only that, but I will tell you that I got messages this week from people in Oregon sending me pictures of screenshots saying, look who we're watching on TV. So
awesome. People are
excited about
it. Well, good. Well, I'm excited because we got a big show tonight.
Yeah, we do.
We got hit country rock and roll songwriter, Hall of Fame songwriter, Dickie Lee on with us right now.
That's right. And then we're going to be talking with hit songwriters and family recording artists, the Hennisons, in hour two.
Yeah. All right, Scott, why don't we get to it? Why don't you tell us who we got here?
Okay, so this gentleman has been on our wish list for several years.
He has.
From getting kicked out of high school chorus to going to college on a partial boxing scholarship. Did you know that?
No.
To having milkshakes with Elvis. He has written hit songs in the 50s, 60s, 70s, 80s, 90s, is still getting big cuts. As a performer, he's logged hits in both rock and roll and country music. He had one of his songs recorded by George Jones, Ann Murray, Elvis, and James Taylor. One song.
That was
one of the songs. He co-wrote the 1996 ACM Song of the Year and Tracy Byrd hit Keeper of the Stars, has earned 20 BMI Performance Awards. He's a member of the NSAI Songwriters Hall of Fame. He is still writing. He's still performing. And we are so, so happy to have him here tonight. It is an honor to say, finally, Dickie Lee, welcome to the Music Row Show. We're glad you're here.
Hey, guys. It's good to be here.
All right.
Nice to have you here.
So you say, I heard you say that you really knew you were a country artist because of something that happened backstage at one of your early concerts. Tell us about that.
Well, you're probably talking about, I do these rock and roll concerts and I get my rock and roll buddies to listen to some of my country songs.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah. And because when I first started listening to radio, I guess, and getting into music in junior high school, I listened to the Grand Ole Opry. Like I'm from Memphis, and it was just a big melting pot.
Right.
I heard, you know, rock and roll, country, rhythm and blues. Just they had a little bit of everything. And I love country. I kind of grew up on like Webb Pearce, Farron Young, Hank Thompson, some of those guys.
Mm-hmm.
I just loved them. And then Elvis came along and made a rock and roller out of me.
Aha! Yeah.
Well, and let's talk about Elvis for a minute, because what do you remember going through your head when Elvis Presley invites you to come to Graceland and hang out and talk about Memphis in that era and Dewey Phillips? Just, I mean, there's just so much there happening.
Oh, it was a magic time, you know. It was just great, you know, and meeting Elvis was fantastic. You know, I thought, no, that'll probably never happen. And Dewey Phillips was something else. You can't explain him. You almost had to have been there. You know,
now, but, Dewey Phillips, just for our listeners, was one of the original big rock and roll DJs.
Oh yeah, he was fantastic. He had a show on 6 days a week from nine to 12 midnight called Red Hot and Blue,
mm-hmm.
and he was really he didn't have an education. He was kind of illiterate. He was smart, but he would he would he would just talk. He would interrupt his records. You know, he would talk over his records and do all kind of stuff that would drive a lot of people crazy. But the kids loved it.
Yeah.
And I remember one night he wanted to see how many people were listening to him. So he said, "Okay, folks." He said at 10 o'clock. He said, and let me preface this by saying Memphis has an anti-horn ordinance. It's against the law to blow your horn in Memphis.
Still?
A lot of people don't know
all
that.
Day long?
Yeah, all the time. You're not supposed to blow your horn.
Really?
But unless emergencies or something mm-hmm. like that. But he said, I want everybody at 10 o'clock that's listening to me to blow their horn, just so I'll know how many people are listening. So at 10 o'clock, it sounded like World War III. You know what I mean? It was amazing. You know, it just went crazy. And dude, he was looked at like a big kid. The chief of police called him personally.
Really?
And said, dude, he said, don't do that anymore, you know? And he said, okay, chief. He said, I won't do it. He said, however, and then he would talk to him. He said, well, I just talked to Chief McDonald. He told me not to do it, and I'm not going to do it anymore. But I was going to tell you guys to do this again at 11 o'clock, you know, since he's told me. He said, but since the chief told me that, he said, don't anybody blow your horns or I'll get in trouble. Same thing at 11 o'clock.
You know, just, perfect.
But he was that kind of guy. You know, he was the first guy to play Elvis.
Right.
And the first guy to play me. In fact, he got me my first record deal.
Really?
But he was something else. I wish someday he'd be in the Hall of Fame. He was kind of unknown. But guys from like Atlantic Records, Chess Records, all these independent labels back then that were so hot, they would all come to Memphis to see him and find out what he liked.
Wow. So backing up a little bit, how did you end up getting invited to go hang out with Elvis? I mean, we kind of glossed over that.
We had our first record out, and when I had my first record out. Dream Boy, and Elvis had just come out with All Shook Up. Mm-hmm. And they went up the charts together, except he was always one slot ahead of me. So it went all the way from entering the charts to number one and number two and stayed there for about 13 weeks. And
wow.
Wink Martindale and Dewey Phillips, they did a show with my band. We had a big show one night, and after it was over, I was leaving, and Elvis, this guy comes up and says, "Hey, Elvis wants to meet you." And I said, "What are you talking about?" He said, "No, he's parked out here on the curb, you know." So
really,
he was out there in his car, his big Cadillac. And I just, you know, he never got out. He just said, "Hey," he said, I'm Elvis Presley. I said, "Oh, I know, I'm Dickie Lee."
Yeah, and
he said, "I really like your record." And I said, "God, that's great. I really appreciate it." And he asked me what I was doing. He said, "You need to come out. You need to come out sometime." So I did. It came out a few times.
Mm-hmm.
And it was kind of neat. I would take girls out there every once in a while. But then I realized they wanted to go out there with me, but they never wanted to leave with me.
They never wanted to take them.
It sort of backfired on you a little bit.
You're doing it to impress them, and you impress them a little too much.
Right.
Yeah. That's never good.
Goodbye. Do you have a sister?
Yeah, it was a fun time.
Wow.
Man.
Wow, crazy. So he did more than just want to hang out, though. He actually helped get you started with Sun Records, right?
Well, he didn't really have that much to do with it. Dewey did that. Dewey said, Elvis, this kid needs some help. He said, he doesn't need any help. You know, he said, he's doing all right. So, but it probably didn't hurt. He probably didn't hurt.
Right.
You know,
yeah.
As far as, because Dewey got me on, after the Dream Boy record, Dewey got me on Sun Records. And I wasn't really the kind of artist that Sam Phillips was looking for. You know, I was kind of, he said, "You sound like one of those teenage idols, you know, one of those Philadelphia teenage idols, you know."
Right.
So,
so then what was Elvis?
he wasn't a Philadelphia teenager.
Okay.
He was
a Memphis.
I was going to say
rocker.
That's a teen idol of all teen idols, right there.
Yeah. But I, you know, over the years, Sam and I got to really be close, and he told me later on. He said, when I first signed you, he said, you were an imitator. He said, you didn't have your own thing, but he said, I'm proud to say you came into your own.
That's great.
Oh, yeah.
So that was kind of a left-handed compliment, but coming from him, it was great.
Well, you were super young, weren't you? I mean, how when did all
that
start happening for you?
I wasn't super young. I was going to college, mm-hmm. you know, and so when I was in my early 20s when Patches first came out, which was my first national hit.
Right. Right, right.
So, well, I was going to actually ask you about that song. That was your first hit, like you said, but didn't it end up getting banned by a bunch of stations? Tell us about that.
Yeah, well, you know, it was a suicide song, you mm-hmm. know, and it came, and the way I got that song, you know, Jack had been my producer at Sun, and we got to be really good friends. Well, you know, Sam fired Jack, and he later, Sam fired everybody, but Jack went to work for Chet Atkins at RCA, and he was screening songs for Chet. And the song came across the desk, and he liked it, and he said, you know, that might be a good song for Dickie. And my friend, we worked together, Alan Reynolds. I don't know if you're familiar with Alan.
Oh, yeah.
You know,
absolutely.
He produced all the Garth Brooks hits. In fact, we came to Nashville together. But
He was your backup singer.
Yeah. He was. I got him in the music business.
That's awesome.
He was – Jack wanted to play the song for Alan. He thought that might be a good song for Alan, and he played it for Alan. And Alan – didn't particularly like it, and she said, "Well, I'm gonna see what Dickie thinks. I love this song, you know."
Yeah.
And to me, it's like modern day Romeo and Juliet,
right?
And so we recorded it, and they put they recorded it, and then they played it for Smash Records, and Smash took it. They leased it to Smash, and when they put the record out, nothing happened. And all these stations said, "We're not playing it. It's a suicide song, you know." And
wow,
we're not gonna do that. And I had disc jockeys. They made me call disc jockeys, and mm-hmm. some of them told me, they said, we're not going to play your record. You know, and like about 6 weeks later, they were asking me to come do a free sock hop for them, you know.
Really?
That kind of thing. Yeah, but
so
it started.
So what changed it? How did it suddenly get traction?
Well, we recorded this song in Beaumont, Texas.
Mm-hmm.
Jack, with a friend of his, Bill Hall, who he'd met from Beaumont, who managed the Buddy Big Bopper and Buddy Holly mm-hmm. and Johnny Preston, they built a studio down there, and they said, we're going to create a new music frontier here in Beaumont. And they got Alan and me to come down there in the early 60s, and we recorded Patches down there. Mm-hmm. And there was a station in Beaumont. Bill Hall knew all the disc jockeys, and they didn't want to play it. He begged them to play it, you know. They finally started playing it, and it just took off right there. But and then there was a station in Houston, Texas, KNUZ, and they weren't going to play it either. And he kept saying, man, this record is happening. It's going to happen. So he finally got KNUZ on it. And when they went on it, that was the first major city that jumped on it, and it just skyrocketed. And then it would just kind of started jumping around from one major city to the other, you know, as they saw what was happening in prior cities. So
wow,
it just kind of
did. It actually help that a couple of them banned it. Do you get any publicity out of that?
You know, possibly.
Yeah.
You know, when I do my shows, I do a deal. I talk about when I first recorded Patches, and I say, you know, this song. When this song came out, the media gave me credit for being the guy that created all the teenage death songs. You know, which actually they did. That was not the first one. You know,
right.
But I said, but since they gave me credit for it, I'll take credit for it.
There you go.
And then I would do my Dickie Lee death medley series.
Yeah, you have a couple songs where people don't make it to the end.
Well, we'll talk more about that.
There are quite a few of them out there. Yeah. You know? Yeah. Not all mine.
No.
Well, again, we're here with Dickie Lee. Before we go for break, we want to let our listeners know that this segment is brought to you by our good friends at Toyota of Cool Springs.
That's true. Scott and I are both Toyota drivers. Been driving them for years, and we particularly love Toyota of Cool Springs because not only do they really strive to give everybody a great customer service experience, but when you go there to buy a car, it's so laid back. They don't jump all over you,
no.
when you walk in the door. It's really awesome. And they've got this unlimited time and miles warranty on every car that they sell, which is, to me, unheard of.
They have a 3-day exchange policy.
I mean, that's just awesome.
And you know what's kind of nice is when we gave Dickie his oil change, you know what he said?
Yeah, he said, oh, that's where I go.
That's where I go.
Yeah.
I tell you what, those people are great.
They're awesome.
I bought my last two cars there.
There you go.
And boy, they have histories on cars. If you don't buy a new one, if you get a pre-owned, I mean, you know the whole history. You know the owner. But they're just they're super with their maintenance.
There you go.
I know, the great maintenance.
You heard it from Hall of Famer Dickie Lee right there.
Go see George, the owner. He's going to take great care of you. Toyota of Cool Springs. Look for him on the web at toyotaofcoolsprings.com. We're going to be right back with more of Dickie Lee right here on the Music Row Show.
Last night at the dance, I met Laurie. So lovely and warm, an angel of a girl. Last night I fell in love with Laurie. Strange things happen in this world.
All right, welcome back to the Music Row Show. That's a tune called Lori by our guest this hour, Dickie Lee.
I want to talk about this song, too, because that's bouncy. Turn it up just for a second here. That is a bouncy pop song.
It's bouncy.
I never thought of it as bouncy, but it is kind of bouncy.
It has
when you consider the subject matter,
the kind of subject it is.
It has tempo, and then you know. So I'm listening to it. And I'm da 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 da, and then halfway through it, I'm going, wait a minute, that's messed up. I mean, it's a sad, freaky song in disguise.
Ghost story.
And it's a ghost story. And was that kind of a thing back then, or were you just?
Well, you know, Alan and I used to write a lot with a friend of ours. His name was Milton Addington, and he was a psychology professor at University of Memphis.
Right. Mm-hmm.
And I'm a big Stephen King freak.
Me too.
I've read almost everything he's written, I think. And we were that one night, we were just fooling around, and I just said, you know, what would it be like to do a ghost story on a record? And we just talked a little bit about it and then forgot it. And a few weeks later, he comes back with the song Laurie. You know, mm-hmm. he'd written it, and
Was this Alan or the professor?
No, this was Milton. We called him Mitt.
Okay.
Yeah, no, he came back, and he had some girl that he knew was telling him about an old folk tale, because there was an old bluegrass song called Taking Mary Home.
Right.
And it was kind of, I never heard of it, but it was same story, basically, you know.
Okay.
But they, out of that, you know, she worked with him a little bit, and he comes back with Laurie, and then we thought, well, you know, when we recorded it, we weren't sure we were going to release it. We were just wanted to see how it came out.
Right.
A little trivia on that song. I had some – Ray Stevens was on that record. Jerry Reed.
Really?
Boots Randolph.
Wow.
And some people I can't even think of right now. But a bunch of stars in their own right were on that
record. Now, what was Ray doing?
I don't even remember. I think he was playing piano.
Because he – played horns in a lot of stuff back in the day, and was a backup Jordanaire too, if I'm not mistaken.
Oh, he's done everything. I remember asking him one day. I did a song that he published, and I said, "Will you sing backup on this with me?" He said, "Well," he said, "you can't afford me. I'll have to do it for nothing."
That's awesome.
That's fantastic. Well, you got the guitar there. You feel like playing us a song?
Sure. Yeah.
Okay. Right.
Anything y'all want in particular, or
just your favorite thing you like to play lately?
Oh man. Let me do something up tempo kind of.
All right.
I saw Linda yesterday.
Okay.
You want me to do the whole thing or just a little?
Come on. Do the whole
thing.
Okay,
let's see. Okay. 1, 2, 3, 4. Hip, hip, dum de do de do de hip, hip, dum de do de do de hip, hip, dum de do de do de hip, hip, dum de do de do de. Nights didn't seem so long no more. Pain wasn't there like it was before. Just when I thought I was really okay, I saw Linda yesterday. My heart went up, down, like a merry-go-round and round, like a falling star down, down. Whoa, 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 whoa. Looked like I'd found peace of mind. Looked like I was gonna make it this time. Just when I thought I was really okay, I saw Linda yesterday. Oh, she smiled that same old smile. My heart was running wild. My love for her increases as I go all to pieces. Hip, hip, dum-de-do-de-do-de-hip,
hip, dum dee do dee do dee hip, hip, dum dee do dee do dee dum diddle dum diddle dum dum dum. So drink to a lonely guy, sit around and watch me cry. People ask what's wrong, I say I saw Linda yesterday. My heart went up, down, like a merry-go-round and round, like a falling star down, down. Whoa, 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 whoa. Hip, hip, dum-dee-do-dee-do-dee, hip, hip, dum-dee-do-dee-do-dee, hip, hip, dum dee do dee do dee dum diddly dum diddly dum 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 dum. Big finish now. Bye.
Yeah.
There it is. There it is. I saw Linda yesterday. Way to go.
There's That's a, there's awesome. A funny story. Alan and I wrote that song. That was my follow-up to Patches.
Okay.
And years later, we found out that Andy Warhol played that song for 24 hours straight while he was painting, trying to figure out the hitting meaning.
It was the dum diddly dum dims, I think, that did it.
He was trying to figure it out. Did he ever figure it out?
Well, you know what? I'm not sure that Andy's quite as bright as I thought he was.
Yeah. Well.
Well, I want to back up just a little bit because you've referenced Cowboy Jack Clement, who we lost a while back. Talk about your relationship and his importance to your music.
Well, he was real responsible for me being in Nashville, because when I went to Sun Records, he was my producer there, mm-hmm. and we got to know each other really well. And like my friend Alan, Alan was in my band, and you know, back then my band we recorded all our own stuff on Sun label. Like I played guitar, and another neat thing about Sun, there were some of the musicians like Jerry Lee, Charlie Rich, a lot of they would play on your sessions.
Sure.
If they happened to be there, they would just come in. You know, it was kind of a big family type thing. But
wow.
I got to know Jack really well, and he later, when he moved to Nashville, he got Alan and me to move up there with him. So
he got you to follow him to Beaumont, Texas. He got you to follow him to Nashville.
He was Moses in another life.
So looking back, what would you say career wise did you learn from Jack from your time with him?
Well, he helped me with my songwriting. In fact, I remember when I first started writing, I said, "Hey, Jack," I said, do you think I could write a hit?" He said, "Sure, you don't have to be that smart to write a hit song." So he really inspired me. You know, but he was a great writer himself.
Oh yeah,
He got my first really big hit, "She Thinks I Still Care." He's the one that got it to George Jones.
Mm-hmm.
So. Yeah, he was something else, and I was with him my whole career. You know, we were together until he died.
Yeah.
Well, let's talk about that song, "She Thinks I Still Care."
Well, yeah, when you actually put the lyrics to paper and look at it,
yeah,
it's just a few lines
it's
a refrain.
It's so simple, you can't believe it.
Yeah.
Know,
so talk about the craft of simplicity, because when you're writing those kind of songs, is there temptation to keep going and write more?
Well, you know, I when I first started with that song, and that song was that was the only song I think I've ever written where I wasn't thinking about I want to write a hit song for somebody. You know,
mm-hmm.
That was kind of a true experience.
Okay,
it was about a girlfriend I had in college. You know, and she dumped me. Thank God, so things really worked out well.
Yeah,
but no, I just thought it just because you know. She did this or I did that, you know, and I got into that just because pattern, and it just really it was really easy to write. Once I didn't write it overnight. I wrote it over a period of a few weeks, I think, but I just kind of, it's like filling in the blanks.
Yeah,
you know?
Yeah. But how do you know you're done? Because it again, because I can imagine when you wrote it down, it's like, all right, well, there's a few lines. But that was the whole song. So how did you know this is done?
Well, that was the whole pattern. I thought, well, you know, like two or three verses and a bridge is enough. So that's kind of it. And I came up with the last line, and it was kind of a little punchline. You know, just because I saw her and went all to pieces, she thinks I still care. Well, where can you go after that? You
right.
Know? So
right.
Wow. Sort of dictated it for you.
Yeah. Really. It kind of wrote itself. Really.
Well, you had another, because we were talking just a few minutes ago about all the people dying in songs. And you had another number one as an artist with a song called Rocky.
Yeah.
Which was another classic example of a country song where somebody gets killed off by the end. But you didn't write that one.
I didn't write that one. Uh-uh.
Yeah. So tell us how you got it and how you decided to go into that genre again.
This is really funny. I didn't even have the first record on that song.
Really?
There was an artist by the name of Austin Roberts.
Okay.
And he recorded that song, and he was on Amy Mala at the time. Nobody's even moved that label today, but it was a hot little rock and roll label. And he put the song out, and nothing happened with it. Well, the writers and publishers were from Springfield, Missouri, and so somehow some of my people got a hold of the song and brought it to me and played it for me. And I really liked it. I just thought it was a really neat song.
Okay.
So we went and recorded it, and while we were recording the song, Reggie Young, who was playing guitar on my session, said, I've recorded this song before, you know, and I said, really? And so that's when we found out, but that Austin Roberts had done it, but that nothing had happened with the record. So anyway, we recorded it and felt good about it and put it out, and you know, it took off, and you know, and they were, of course, RCA, they would just ship my records country. And as soon as they did that, the Amy Mahler record saw it. They re-released or got back on the Austin Roberts record, and he had a big pop hit out of it, too.
Oh, good.
I had a crossover pop and a number one country record with it. But it was
so on the pop side, there were two of the same song being played at the same time?
Yeah. Now, his song went higher than mine did pop because I didn't get that much pop play. But
that just does not happen today, does it? You can't have two songs with the same song with different artists.
It'd be pretty weird, I think.
Yeah.
But it really wasn't that unusual back then. I mean, there was several times when if a song hit, all of a sudden you'd hear a lot of different artists.
Well, I'll tell you a really funny story. Like we were talking about She Thinks I Still Care.
Yeah.
We're going way back now. Connie Francis MGM and J.P. Morgan on MGM.
Mm-hmm.
They both recorded it.
Right.
On the same label.
Really?
You know? Yeah.
Wow.
So now that's something I never heard of. I don't know exactly what the purpose was there, but
wow,
it was pretty wild.
Wow. Well, we've already talked about him a couple times, but this backup singer that you had that you've done that did all right for himself, not just with Garth, but he did. Was it Crystal Gayle? Didn't he do Crystal Gayle stuff?
Yeah, Kathy Mattea.
He's
done a bunch of people.
Yeah.
So talk about him, and you also did a lot of co-writing with him. So what was it about him that you seemed to gel with as a writer?
Well, you know, when I first did Dream Boy, we were first talking about that. The way that started, like I went up to Dewey Phillips' radio show a few nights, and one night after he got off the air, I asked him if he'd listen to a couple of songs.
Mm-hmm.
And
Dewey Phillips.
Yeah, Dewey. Yeah, and one of them being Dream Boy, and the other side. The other song was Stay True Baby. It was a real rock and roll thing. And Dream Boy was kind of a ballad. And he said, I like these songs. He said, have you got a band? I said, nope. He said, why don't you put a band together and come back up here and let me hear it. And I thought, okay. So I did. You know, I just started talking to some different guys. And that's the way Alan and I hooked up. He was going to my band. They either went to University of Memphis, which was Memphis State at the time, or they went to Southwestern, which is Rhodes College today.
Okay.
And anyway, I got a little rhythm section together, and we started playing around, and then I was just looking for some different ones, and then got Alan and a couple of other guys from Southwestern. You know, just I'm not even sure. I think one guy was going to play bass with me, and something happened, and he got Alan to substitute for him or something, and that's how Alan and I actually got together, and he turned out to be a singer. Our group was Dickie Lee and the Collegiates.
Okay,
first started, but Alan and I, we just kind of stuck. You know, we've been together ever since too.
That's great.
Nice. Well, we got to take a break, but I got to tell you, we got a whole bunch of questions coming in from folks on Facebook.
There's
a couple we're gonna have to ask you. It was a pretty funny one here. So what? Keep that in mind. We're gonna be back with Dickie Lee here on the Music Row Show in just a second. So come on back.
Got 9,999,999 tears to go, and then
Yeah, welcome back to the Music Row Show. I love it when the song just tells you the title right there at the top. That's 9,999,999 tears.
Yes,
big,
it is.
Big hit for Dickie Lee, who's our guest here this hour.
I just love those songs. I miss those songs where the chorus starts out the song. I've always liked that. That's great stuff. Talk about the glamorous touring life of a rock and roll singer in the 50s and 60s. What would surprise most people about that that life?
The boredom.
The glamorous boredom.
I finally figured out everybody that wants to go on the road are people that have never been on the road.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And the shows are the fun part.
Yeah.
Right? It's all in between, you know. A lot of times not a lot of sleep, you know. You getting up at all crazy hours. That's one thing I didn't realize when I got into this business. Boy, you're going to have to get up early sometime.
Got to do all those morning shows after. Yeah.
Well, from what you can see, you know, in today's business, how different was the life of a recording artist back then versus now? I mean, obviously the traveling still happens.
Well,
but
I didn't have 4 18-wheelers and a couple of buses, so, you know.
You didn't have the big screens and the pyrotechnics?
I never even had a bus. I had a van. I had a guy in Memphis furnish me with vans, and which was fine, which was all I needed, you know. We had a trailer. I had a trailer built, and we pulled all our stuff. And that was...
And it was fairly simple. You didn't have a big light show and all that kind of thing.
Oh, yeah. It was very simple. Yeah. You know?
Were you doing the combo shows where your band's playing and there's several other bands playing? Or how did that...
Yeah, you know, most of the time, when I first started, it was just me and my band.
Okay.
And then when I really started doing the combo shows is like in the 80s when I started doing these rock and roll nostalgia shows.
Right.
Again. Okay.
And you'd have maybe 3 or 4 acts.
Fabian.
I played with Fabian a lot.
Yeah.
And they would really share
a band or something?
Yeah, you would always share a band because, you know, they just too much time trying to switch things up, and you'd have the promoter, they'd get a band. And these bands are tremendous. You know, there are 3 or 4 tremendous bands we played with, and, boy, they would know your stuff just perfect.
That's great.
That was really fun. That was really fun.
That's great. Didn't we have a question from our Facebook friends?
Well, we did.
The one about...
That's right. A listener, I believe Rita, was asking if you wanted to get a cut here in Nashville, is it better to live here? Does that help in getting a cut?
I think so. You know, and especially today, because I've been working with a girl. Her name is Olivia Harlan, and she's a Fox Sports Network girl.
Oh, wow.
Okay.
And she's really good. And she just graduated from the University of Georgia and is just getting started. And she loves to write. She writes all the time, but she's got a really promising TV career. And I've talked to a few people, some of the labels, you know, they said, you know, she's got to decide what she wants to do, because today she said, if you're going to write, you need to be here all the time, whether you write by yourself or writing with somebody, but said, you just got to be here. And they don't want to invest in you, even if you're not.
Sure.
And they say, you know, like, and even as an artist, you know, she's really a good singer. And they said, it's even worse with the labels if you're an artist, because I mean, you'll be doing tours for them and everything. And you can't just say, well, I got these TV shows I got to do for the next few weeks. You know, I won't be here during football season. And, you know, they don't go for that.
Yeah. Well, I bet if she becomes like an Aaron Andrews,
if she becomes a big star, then
there might be some.
Well, you know that. Well, you know the way some of these guys have talked to me about her, they said she's really good. They said, you know, it'd be great if she started out, you know, just like putting her stuff out, you know, on iTunes or something
and
starting her own little thing and building her own following.
Sure, because she'll already have that name recognition.
Yeah, yeah, at her convenience. And then if anything good happens, she can decide, well, what do you want to do when you grow up? You know.
Yeah. And what's her name? I'm going to write this down.
Olivia Harlan.
Olivia Harlan.
She's really good, and she's going to do a lot of football this year.
Excellent.
Awesome.
And she went to the University of Georgia.
Great.
We won't hold that against her.
Well, listen, we need to take another quick break, but we're going to come back with more of Dickie Lee. And when we come back, I'd love to talk about Keeper of the Stars, big old hit for Dickie Lee.
I'd love to get one more song out of him, too.
That, too. So we'll be back in just a few minutes on the Music Row Show.
She thinks I
because I ask a friend about her.
All right, welcome back to the Music Row Show. You know that song.
Just because I spoke,
She Thinks I Still Care. Big hit for George Jones and probably about 100 other people, it seems like, you know.
Well, and that version is Dickie singing, and we can all buy
Dickie
Lee. Dickie Lee, we're here with Dickie Lee, and you can buy that CD at your website and also on iTunes, I believe. Is that correct?
Yeah, as far as I know.
Okay, and it's DickieLee.com?
DickieLeeMusic.
DickieLeeMusic.com. Mm-hmm. There you go. Everybody go to that website, and there's a little speaker, and click on that, and you can buy his CDs right there.
Sweet. Well, listen, before we run out of time, what if you do another song for us, that'd be amazing.
Okay, let me... Well, I'll tell you what, we were talking about John Schneider and been around.
Yeah.
You know, maybe I'll try a little of that if I can remember it.
That's a great song.
All right.
He was a really neat guy and had a great record with his song. So let's see if I can... Let me see if I can do it. Let's see. Here we go.
Hush. Don't talk now. It won't change anything anyhow. Just hold me while the shadows bring us near. I know you're not in love with me. I'm not asking you. And there's no use pretending why we're here. You don't need to try and fool me. You don't need to lead me on. You don't need to say you love me. I've been around enough to know. Don't tell a lie, 'cause I just might believe it tonight. And I know you're only trying to ease your mind. But don't worry, it's alright. I don't care if it's wrong or it's right. Just hold me close and love me one more time. You don't need to try and fool me. You don't need to lead me on. You don't need to say you love me. I've been around enough to know. You don't need to say you love me. I've been around enough to know.
All right.
Yeah. There it is. Big old Woo. Hit for John Schneider.
Love that. Yeah.
And if I'm not mistaken, they had to... when they first sent that out to radio stations, they didn't put his name on it.
Why? Well, you know, he'd had a few minor pop hits.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And you know, country music disc jockeys, they don't like these guys because they think they've got this attitude. Well, I'm not happening pop, so I'll just go country.
Country's yeah, easy. That'll be easy.
So
yeah.
They thought, you know, we're not gonna put his name on there because guy's a great country singer.
Yeah,
yeah.
And that's what he wanted to do. And so yeah, he was on Warner Brothers, and they just put a question mark where his name was and didn't come out with his name until the record really started making some noise.
Isn't that funny?
Nice.
Well, Hino wanted to talk about Keeper of the Stars, which was, of course, ACM Song of the Year just a few years back. Talk about writing that. Did you have a sense that it had a potential of being a special cut, or do you ever?
Well, that song, Danny Mayo, who was a songwriter, died a few years ago, mm-hmm. and he came to me and he had that title. And I love the title. It's kind of the philosophy of my life. And he said, what do you think about a song like Keeper of the Stars? And when he did that, I said, it was no accident me finding you. And we just went into it, you know. Wow. And it was, I think that's the quickest I've ever reacted to somebody giving me a song title.
Wow.
But then there was a third party, Karen Staley.
Karen Staley,
and she, and we were just kind of, we got stuck on it. And Danny just said one day, he said, I got Karen to help us. And she kind of got us going on the bridge, mm-hmm. kind of saved us. So it all turned out really well.
That's great.
That's awesome. I love that. Well, you know, a subject that comes up a lot on the show and just in conversation is, you know, people tend to gripe about the current state of country music and the business and all that sort of thing. And I have a feeling that's always been going on. And I was just curious, what were people griping about in your various decades of your career, you know, in the 50s? What were people griping about then?
I've been bitching about radio ever since I got started. You know?
Yeah.
And boy, I tell you, I don't consider myself in it now. You know, I've had my era, but boy, if I was in it now, I would really be doing some bitching, I think.
Yeah.
It's tough. It's really tough. You, back in my day, I mean, you could cut a song in your garage, and if they liked it and it sounded good, it'd get played. I mean, it cost you hundreds and hundreds of thousands of dollars today to get a song going.
Well, and you could have regional hits, too, that could sustain a beginning career too, and they don't really have the regional feel anymore.
It's just so hard, you know. It's just so hard to get songs on the radio, and you've got to, it's almost like you've got to be branded. You've got to have a brand today, to get something going,
Like a soft drink.
And they're just right, and there's just so many good songs. I mean, people still writing some great songs. And there's so many songs that don't get heard today. And usually the cream would rise to the top back in my era. I think that's the greatest thing about it and the biggest difference to me.
Yeah. Okay. Well, Texas is probably one of the few places that actually does have a regional. They have their own little thing going, radio station-wise.
But it used to be every region had a thing. And now, you're right, Texas is a whole, but that's a whole different animal. But, you know, it used to have the Northeast and the Southeast and, you know, the Northwest area with Paul Revere and the Raiders, you know.
Yeah, a song would break out in a little spot.
Sure.
And then it would just kind of like Patches did, you know.
Yeah. I've had conversations with people who grew up in different parts of the country, and they're like, yeah, that was a big hit on the radio when we were kids. Don't you remember that? And I'm like, no.
Nope.
That wasn't on the radio where I was at, you know. That could happen.
That's it.
I really believe I was in the most exciting time. Of course, I'm sure artists today think they were too.
But,
well, I'm glad.
This has been an exciting time.
Thanks for sharing an hour with us. Thank you very much.
Thanks for having me, guys. I loved it.
We loved having you on. Go to DickieLeeMusic.com, and you can buy his great music. There's a lot of hits on those CDs, so you definitely want to check those out.
That's it. And stick around, because we have more. We have another hour. We're going to be here with the Henningsons.
Yes.
Lots to talk about with them as well.
Really looking forward to that. We'll be right back in a few minutes on the Music Row Show. Good.